Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everybody. This is Ryan Gibson. And unfortunately, Tate is not joining me today, but I am joined by a very special guest, my colleague, my friend of over 10 years, Ted Green. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And today I want to kind of address one of the number one questions we get from pilots, which is, Ryan, I've been listening to all 100 episodes of Passive Income Pilots, and I've noticed that there's a theme. We save on taxes. We have self-directed IRAs. We've talked to some great folks and we've gotten some awesome tax and legal strategies. But what about an advisor or somebody that can help you put it all together and really do that? And so that's why I brought on Ted. So welcome, Ted. And before I get into your background and history and why I think this is going to be so fitting for the pilot community to hear, you know, why don't you just give us like a little bit about yourself?
Despite the strong hairline and rock hard abs, I'm not in my 20s. I'm 56. Melissa and I, who went to high school together, we've been married for 23 years. We have two kids, one in college, one post-college. You and I have been chumming around for about 10 years and working together for more than five here at Spartan, and life's pretty good. I'm happy.
I love it. And yeah, and I think this is kind of fun. So Ted was, first of all, he was a VP at Merrill Lynch for over 20 years, first as a financial advisor, then as a portfolio manager. And I think what's so interesting about Ted's background is he has the stocks, bonds, mutual funds, traditional investing experience, but then he actually worked with one of the founding people at a self-directed IRA company. And that's how we actually got connected, because when I first got into investing, the first thing that I was so excited to do was use my IRA to actually invest in real estate outside of my airline 401k. And that's how I met Ted. You know, Ted started a company called WealthFlex that was eventually sold into Yield Street years ago. So Ted has this unique blend of sort of knowing the Wall Street, financial planning, financial education, all the things that go into help advising somebody to have a very robust and diversified portfolio. But then he also has the self-directing side of it, and then has now invested heavily in alternative assets. Can you kind of speak to what maybe you're doing today, kind of how your portfolio is sort of comprised?
Through the school of hard knocks and having made more mistakes than anybody else that I know, my comfort level with risk is different today than 25 or 30 or 34 years ago. So for me, for Melissa and I should say, our definition of success is derived from a well-diversified portfolio that gives us the emotional comfort and gives us that peace of mind at night that even in the fastest market where things are really scary, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I really like that. And that's what I've always enjoyed doing that. And just set the stage too, Ted works directly with me at Spartan Investment Group, and he actually works with all of our investors. And he's been helping thousands and thousands of our investors navigate into investing in alternatives, investing into real estate. So if you're listening to the show and you're a Spartan investor, you probably have talked to Ted, right? You've had your TED talk, as they say. So
fortunately or unfortunately, they've probably had to come across.
Yeah. They've had the TED talk, right? And so I think the thing that we're going to get into the show today is blending that traditional and alternative investing wisdom. Let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Ted, you talked about being in Wall Street and investing in Wall Street and actually it working kind of with investors and how to invest in Wall Street, but talk about that move to alternative investing.
So with my experience at Merrill, was just a little bit shy of 20 years. Sorry for not cleaning that up. But the move away from Wall Street was from a self-inflicted wound perspective. Emotionally, you more so than most might have seen my emotions at very raw levels, part of being friends and business partners and all the rest of it. But Wall Street can be very damaging from a financial and an emotional perspective. And so my definition of success from a career perspective is multifold. Number one, happiness and joy, fun, but also reducing the risk. You know, at one point I was sued for $68 million after the internet was embedded and an investor lost some money. And I had young kids and a big mortgage. That's really bad. That's scary. So the transition away from Wall Street was focused on where do I find fun and enjoyment, emotional peace, but something that's rewarding as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. No, I want to kind of get into, you know, we talked a lot about this before the show, you know, sort of your definition of success, yeah. Right? You mentioned, you know, there's some issues and kind of pushed you into really diversifying your portfolio. And I think a lot of pilots want to know, how much money do I put where and how? And I heard crypto and I heard real estate and I heard stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and I'm buying NVIDIA stock and I'm doing this. And then, you know, how much oil and natural gas should I have? And these, all these questions, right? And, you know, I think what we've had such a good conversation about how it really just boils down to your situation. And one thing that I wanted to really tackle was, you know, I know you've written an ebook on defining your level of success. And I think the ebook is kind of neat because it talks about you and your spouse. It starts with you and your spouse or you're investing, whoever you're investing with in your life, or maybe if you're solo investing, what questions you should ask each other or your spouse before you go on this journey to do all this investing. Because I'll be the first to admit, I wasn't aligned with my spouse in the beginning. I kind of went off and just started doing, you know, all these different things. And that creates a lot of issues, right? Talk to me about how you define success.
So with Melissa, my dear wife, when we start talking about investments in risk, I can almost promise you and guarantee you that her first question is going to be, is it risky? That's Melissa. You know, I don't want to take a lot of risk. And that's a very appropriate emotional response from her, given her appetite for risk. However, putting puzzle pieces together that are not necessarily correlated as part of your overall portfolio gives room for ideas that may bring some volatility, but because you've got other puzzle pieces that serve a different purpose, maybe they're very low risk, but have higher cash flow coming off of them, 8, 9, 12% per year cash flow, but not much volatility, you can start to blend those puzzle pieces together to provide a definition of success for a couple contingent on the cumulative portfolio and the cumulative risk of the portfolio. So then you start to peel back the layers once you've gotten there.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of things that pilots might want to do is like sit down and with their spouse and say, what is your long-term vision of investing? What types of risks are you willing to take? When do you want to retire? How much do you want to have in retirement? Do we want to pay for kids' college or do we want somebody, you know, for them to do it? You know, these are things that you should probably get clear with your spouse. And I know that you wrote these 50 questions and you made it the book so you can actually write in the notes and you can kind of make this guide for you to get on the same page. And it's surprising what you will hear if you listen to what your spouse has to say. Yeah. you know, when you ask the question and just sort of let them answer, it's really, I think, telling. Like for Melissa, not wanting, you know, asking about risk, you know. How do you kind of like, when she asked that question, like, how do you answer that? I mean, what makes something risky or not risky in your mind and hers?
Okay. Great question. How do we define risk? Is risk defined for potentially some investors as being underfunded when you get to retirement? Yes, that's a risk. Is risk defined by interest rates move one way or the other? If they move down and stay down, what is your fixed income portfolio going to yield you in that new environment? Or if interest rates move up, what's the marketability of your real estate? You know, so what's risk? My goodness, there's, you know, 50 terms to define risk. And so the sum of the parts needs to be the portfolio of which are small puzzle pieces that you collectively agree to put together.
You know, you keep talking about these puzzle pieces, and I think this is really important because you said something that said assets that are correlated. And I'll admit, 10 years ago, I didn't know what people meant when somebody sent that. So can you kind of explain to the pilots out there, when you put assets or make investments that are not correlated, what does that mean?
Okay. it means that there's a reasonable chance that if investment A declines in value, investment B increases in value and goes up. And remember that 2008 and 2009, stocks were going down, bonds were going down. So that 60-40 magic portfolio that Wall Street works talks about and works with, there was a period of time where it broke. Interest rates were going down, bonds were going down. Think of, you know, General Motors, bankruptcy, all the rest of it. So the idea of kind of like a piston, you know, one cylinder's going up, one piston's going up, one piston's going down.
No, it's good. It makes sense. So in 2008 or 2009, reflecting back on that, you said you wanted to be in things that weren't correlated. Well, if stocks went down and bonds went down, what went up during that time frame that maybe somebody would have like a small puzzle piece of investment in?
Okay. So personally, scar tissue, mistakes made, lessons learned. Personally, I'm invested in permanent insurance, life settlements. It's a whole big thing, not for today, but life settlements have no correlation, from what I'm aware of.
Sure.
They have no correlation to the economy, to interest rates, to oil. I guess they do. They are correlated to whether or not the sun comes up.
Right. That's a whole different. Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting. So, you know, and I know we're gonna dig into that during the show, but I appreciate that. So I think the number one takeaway here is get on the same page, like define your success. And if you want a copy of that ebook, there'll be a link in the show notes. You'll click on that. You'll get Ted's book on that. Just they're really 50 thought provoking questions to ask your wife and make your playbook with your spouse or with yourself on what you want to get out of investing. That way, when you go venture off and you start talking about making a move in your portfolio, you're on the same page and you're starting from the same united front, right?
100%. And frequently it's the ladies that need to drag the husband to the table for that same conversation. So just being real with what we've experienced over the years working together. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to talk to Ted about planning that, or maybe after you get those questions answered, there'll be an opportunity to schedule time with Ted to do that. Okay, theme number two that I know we talked about before the show is you said, I like to maximize the opportunity. And one thing that you said to me that really stuck with me was the best thing I ever did was move away from Wall Street. And we kind of talked about that, your pains of managing a portfolio and things happening out of that. But you said something that really stuck with me, which you said, concentrations build wealth. And diversification protects it. What did you mean by that?
So scar tissue, mistakes made. Personally, I've seen chapters of life for decades where I was over-concentrated in the stock market. It's what I knew. It's what I grew up on. First job out of college at Merrill Lynch, and there you go. So moving away from Wall Street, my eyes were opened at the custodial firm where you and I interacted.
Where we did self-directed IRAs. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. A lot of pilots did that.
So that's where I started to see private investments taking shape, being held as long open positions, and then closing with the return of principal and a gain, and it was not stock market related. And over a couple of years, I really learned, wow, there's a lot of asset classes, there's a lot of ways you can gain exposure to risk, and the point is, take that big puzzle piece that's really volatile, the stock market, and there's a place for it in everybody's portfolio,
sure.
I truly believe. But if the average annual rate of return, according to Goldman Sachs, for the stock market for the next 10 years truly is 3%, remember that was broadcasted early in 2025. Well, maybe that's an extrapolation of we're at an elevated price earnings multiple, and maybe things just need to mean revert for the next 10 years. So reducing the exposure to the most volatile assets and gaining exposure to assets that make consistent monthly distributions or are invested in non-stock market related areas of the economy, that's a best practice that should be looked at.
All right. So, no pilot left behind. Ted said a lot. So I'm going to unpack it for the person that is like, what did he just say? Look, Ted was working on Wall Street and exposed 100% to the stock market.
Yes.
And we talk a lot about this on the show. That's what pilots get. Pilots get a 401k and a massive defined contribution, 18, 19% plus the spill cash into the balance plan, market-based cash balance plan. And that's all they get, right? And so we talk a lot about on the show about diversification. And that could be through a 401k loan, popping a 401k loan out, putting a 50K into real estate or a syndication. And a lot of pilots have done that. They get overexposed. And at the by the time you get to your retirement, you're just basically relying on whatever's in your 401k and then sort of deflating the air in the balloon when you retire and hoping that there's enough by the time you live your life, right? Maybe there's a little left to give to your kids. Real estate, I think Ted's light bulb went off when he started working at this self-directed IRA company, yep. Which if you're just tuning into the show, you can actually take your old Air Wisconsin, Mesaba, SkyWest, whatever, wherever you were at your regional, if you still have a 401k plan there, you can roll it into a self-directed IRA with a very specific company that you can listen to episode 110, IRA Club, or Matt Sorensen's episode that had with us a directed IRA, whatever it is. And you can actually roll that into a self-directed IRA. And that way, that part of your retirement is actually diversified into real estate, syndications, other types of things, oil and gas, all the other things that we do. And so I think when what Ted is saying is that, yes, the stock market should be in everybody's portfolio, but then you have this real estate percentage of your portfolio allocated. Now, I'm going to get personal for a second.
Okay.
Most of my holdings are
in... This is interesting, by the way.
Yeah. Most of my holdings are in real estate, right? And, you know, I had an airline career for 17 years. And yes, I invested in the stock market. But when I left my regional airline, I went from Mesaba to Air Wisconsin, Air Wisconsin to Alaska, Alaska to Delta. When I left those respected airlines, I took my 401ks, rolled them into a self-directed IRA and invested in real estate. Now, everything I do at Spartan, I invest in all of our deals. We have lots of real estate. Probably 90% of my holdings are in hard real estate assets. So my wife and I, when we talk about our personal portfolio, we're talking about getting more exposure to the stock market. Not because I think it's better, but because I don't have enough exposure to it as a percentage. So of my wealth, about 90% of it is in real estate, right? And as a pilot, you're probably thinking, well, geez, 98% of my exposure is to the stock market, right? So we're, you know, different things for different people. I think that's kind of the lesson.
And so talking about perspective, from my perspective, the stock market gives me sweaty palms. True story, I just took a loan from my 401k, pulled that, so that 50, the max is 50,000. So that 50,000 came out of exposure to the stock market. My deferrals to the 401k repay the principal, contribute to the profitability of the plan because I'm paying interest on that loan to myself. I like that. I could care less. But I had a position in crypto and that cash is sitting in my checking account. And now $1,000 a week, we're putting that into the Bitcoin.
Yep.
Who knows? Maybe I'm dead wrong, but it gives me the exposure. It pulls the exposure away from the stock market to an alternative asset class.
And by the way, just so you know, I don't mean to share what you do, but you've got exposure to real estate because you invest in the Spartan investment dealings, right? And holdings. So you have your stock market, you have your real estate, and now you have a little bit of crypto.
Yep.
And you invest in oil and gas, right? So Ted is what I consider probably ideally diversified across a lot of different things. And so that doesn't keep him exposed to any part of anything that goes up or down, right?
Yeah. I think for Melissa and I, part of our definition of success is no matter what happens, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
That's the goal. We're not trying to maximize the return on the stock market or on real estate or interest rates or oil. Whatever happens, I want to be just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the thing that you said to me, your quote was diversification means different things to different people at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's not a groundbreaking quote, but it's, you know, it speaks to this, right? And so I think, you know, a key takeaway is, you know, tailor your diversification to what you want to do with your spouse in those 50 questions.
Yep.
All right. One thing you said to me too, we were having a great conversation in the office here. You have the NNN principle.
Yeah.
Tell the listeners what that NNN stands for.
So fortunately or unfortunately, I was at Merrill Lynch when the internet was invented and the dot-com stocks before the bubble burst, it was some kind of it was a wild frontier. People were it was really wild. Stocks were just going crazy for a couple of years. When the bubble burst, massive wealth was destroyed, period, paragraph, that's the whole show. You know, so I remember vividly, I set my phone down, I looked over at my business partner and I just thought to myself, I will never, never, never make investment decisions based on what I'm seeing in the rearview mirror. In the late 1990s, those of us that have little to no hair, we recall the the run-up, and it was insane. But the NASDAQ going down by 74% was equally insane, and it's that FOMO. We want to participate in the upside. So the takeaway, never, never, never will I look at a market, and because it's so good, I'm not going to maintain my allocation just because I'm afraid of missing out if I pull back on the throttle and exit to a different asset class. My portfolio is a representation of our priorities for cash flow, for long-term growth. We like six or seven asset classes that we're in, the sum of which gives us the volatility that we're comfortable with, the cash flow we're comfortable with.
Yeah, that's such sage advice. I mean, you know, if you think about people that invested in real estate in 2021, if, you know, we talked to so many investors and they just want to put it all in. They want to clear out their accounts. They want to clear out their, you know, whatever they have to invest in real estate and diversify 100% of their holdings against, you know, away from the stock market. It's such a terrible idea, right? Just instead, you know, I want you to talk about your laddering approach here in a second, but just instead put a little bit aside, you know, every year and get exposure to real estate. Don't go millions and millions of dollars or put all your nest egg in there. I think investors really get that wrong. And like the dot-com bubble burst of, you know, the 90s or 2000, that gives a great example of how that was all the rage. So everybody went all in on it. I know that you had clients that went all in on it, and tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars were wiped out in wealth overnight. And if they just had a little exposure to other things, maybe they could have preserved a lot of that.
Yep. Without any question.
Yeah. Okay. So the next thing is, this has kind of been a theme, you know, a puzzle is a lot of pieces.
Yep.
Right. And you said, you know, you like the little puzzle pieces, right? You know, you said something to me that was very profound, which is smaller positions are better protection.
Yeah.
So can you kind of tell about that, about, you know, maybe talk about the WorldCom thing?
Well, you know, investors who have concentrated positions, they're likely, their focus is on building wealth. So concentrated positions build wealth. However, diversified positions protect wealth. You know, in the late 1990s, when the internet was invented, you know, concentrated positions. I had one investor, he had an insane amount of wealth. It was over $250 million. And then tragically, the market moved against and business plans changed and Bernie Ebers defrauded WorldCom and on it went. And it's, I mean, you can just imagine where the investor that's heavily concentrated, where that investor ended up. And, you know, so the takeaway from me, having the scar tissue, and, you know, people don't learn by reading a book. Some of the stuff, you just got to get dented up and skinned up and lose some serious money. But anyway, the takeaway for me is, okay, knowing that I'm bad at predicting when the stock market is going to turn. Ryan, you know better than most. I've been talking about a recession at Spartan for, you know, it's embarrassing how long I've been thinking this is going to happen. Takeaway for me is, okay, if I'm in asset classes that are illiquid, however, if I'm building positions in small increments, so in the next year, I likely have three deals that will turn over here at Spartan. Maybe it's 400,000, maybe it's 450,000. We'll find out. But because I've sequentially built entered positions that are likely to last 3 to 5 years, and I've got a handful of them, and I continue to layer into a variety of asset classes in small position sizes, maybe it's 2% of your net worth that you make a bet with, maybe it's a little bit more. But if you're in a variety of different asset classes, building sequential maturities because you're entering slowly, what that does, and for Melissa and I think we're about 60% private investments where we're at right now. But what that does for us is it turns an illiquid asset class into a liquid asset class, because in a variety of different asset classes, you've got one or two or three deals maturing each year. And so that 60%, 20% of that's likely going to come due in the next year for that portion of our net worth, giving us optionality. And as an investor, if you can pivot, and maybe I buy Amazon at $135 12 months or 18 months from now because it's there, and I can, because I planned to not be fully invested with only one maturity, but because I've got a bunch of little maturities, some of which mature each year. How did I do describing that?
Yeah, I think a simple way of thinking about this is, we've talked about this on the show in previous episodes. We all know that most of our retirement as pilots are going into your defined contribution, hitting the stock market. Fine. Here's the thing. What happens when the stock market tanks? When you're 64 and a half or whatever, just about to retire out, you're going to hope that every year you took 100 grand, 200 grand, whatever it is, and diversified into something that wasn't associated with Delta United, you know, whatever. And you're going to be happy that you are in other investments that are uncorrelated to the stock market's performance. And those investments, like a syndication, is a 5-year deal typically, or a 6-year deal. And somebody might say, well, that's illiquid because I can't get it back. And you're right, it is illiquid. But on that 5-year, 6-year hold period, if you start doing those, imagine if you're a pilot and you're listening to this and you're 55. And for the next 10 years, you do 100 grand a year into a real estate deal. Now you've got $1 million in real estate deals. You hit 64 and a half, 65. You go out, you retire, and the stock market tanks. You're taking your RMDs. You're having to live off of, you know, that stock market income, and it's down, right? Mm-hmm. Now you've got, but you did those 10 deals, and every year in retirement, maybe one of those deals is selling and paying off. And now the market's down, and man, you're glad that you had that money not in the stock market that would have tanked. And now you're getting these deals that are selling, and you're getting this pile of cash, and you can seize the opportunity because now you've got this money that was in something else that was uncorrelated that is paying out. And maybe you did those 10, and now for the next 10 years, those deals are paying out. They're cashing out, right? You're getting that money back. And now you can be entering a different point of the stock market, things like that. So I like the laddering concept that you talk a lot with a lot of our investors about, because it gives you that flexibility and starts diversifying away from the stock market and kind of gives you that sort of level playing field. Yeah.
And to just piggyback along that, you know, this is just my personal experience, and I'm not the youngest guy in the room, but I'm not the oldest investor in the world. Just having been beat up by life, for Melissa and I, this is what works. And ideally, having 5 or 6 different asset classes mingled together, you're not going to get blown up doing that.
You're not going to
be disappointed.
Yeah. And never invest what you can't afford to lose is my takeaway, right? Like, nothing is guaranteed in life. And, you know, take small positions and be incremental about it and really have that good strategy. So I just want to thank you, Ted, for coming on. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Really, we had 5 themes that we talked about today. Get clear on what your success is. If you want a copy of that book, you can click the show notes and we can send you a copy of that. Maximize your opportunities, right? Make sure that you're going into all different types of the market. Diversify your portfolio intentionally. Yep. Never look backward on things. Take smaller and smaller positions. Never look backward, I should say, to make investment decisions that end. Never, never, never. And, you know, consider that when you're kind of going forward in your investment. So thanks so much for joining us, Ted. And thanks for listening. Catch you guys on the next episode.
Bye, everybody.